collected 5 different life forms from the darkest corners of the universe. Monsters.
Collision imminent.
Invasive species. Predatory. If we don't lock them down, it will be too late.
Beware, spoiler phobes! You have stumbled into a storm of spoilers, a podcast currently covering the FX on Hulu series Alien Earth, a complete phrase I thought I'd never say when 20th Century Fox was sold to the Walt Disney Corporation. Speaking of corporations, they have taken over Earth, and whoopsie, there's a xenomorph here. This podcast is the preview episode for showrunner Noah Hawley's Alien Earth show, and this episode will be split into 2 sections. The first section, which we call The Calm, will only discuss Alien Earth in the context of previews, teases, and one excellently moderated San Diego Comic-Con panel. The second section of the podcast, which we call The Storm, will dive into speculation and what's coming up in the series, any franchise connections that Alien Earth may have to our perpetual question, birthed by years of fried franchise brain, is there gonna be a predator in this show? We're not ruining, we're enriching. Hello, I'm Dave Gonzalez, and you can't trust the company.
And I'm Neil Miller, and I am delighted to welcome you back to the goopiest era of the new edition of A Storm of Spoilers.
Just in case you would like to catch more of Neil and I, this podcast feed is becoming an Alien Earth reaction podcast. New podcast episodes will go up every Wednesday afternoon. If you would like more Neil and more Alien, Neil will be streaming Alien Isolation on Twitch at twitch.tv/Neilstradamus. That's NEILSTRADOMUS every Monday evening around 8 p.m. Central Time, starting on the 11th of August. Neil, How can they interact with this show here?
All kinds of ways, Dave. You can, of course, send us a raven, stormofspoilers@gmail.com, if you have questions, comments, Alien Earth thoughts, really just anything you want to say to us. You can also, of course, review us on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, or leave us a comment and a rating on Spotify. Of course, the eternal rule, no matter where you are in space or time, is that you can leave us a 5-star rating and then say whatever you want. I got one this week from user Sunny Days, who says, "I initially found Storm of Spoilers through the Trial by Content podcast, RIP, and enjoyed going back, pun intended, to listen to the Lost recaps. I've stuck around since then, and recent Star Wars content has been awesome. I'm excited to see what Dave and Neil do next with this feed and their Patreon, which I also recommend at either level. For what it's worth, my vote for the next rewatch project is The Wire." Ooh, The Wire is a good one. Again, I've mentioned this many times, have The Wire box set literally right behind me this whole time.
Everybody needs one more white dude and one more Latin dude's opinion on The Wire, I think.
Absolutely. But if you are someone who would like to get more content and would like to take Sunny Day's advice and join up with the Patreon, you can join us over at patreon.com/DaveandNeil, DA7EANDNEIL, for more content related to the stuff that you've heard on this feed, behind the extra content from the Lost era, the Game of Thrones era. You can get Dave and I's Twin Peaks rewatch project, which was a lot of fun. We did a Leftovers rewatch recently that just concluded and was amazing. We are currently doing a Hannibal rewatch that has been delicious and is making everyone horangry, which, if you don't know what that means, you're just going to have to join us and find out. And you get access to our wonderful Slack, which is a community that has, as far as I can tell, 0 toxic people in it. It's great. And if that's not enough, you get a new episode of the Adventure Pod, the Pop Culture Adventure, every Friday. This month, we are covering spoof movies. We're talking Airplane. We're talking Top Secret. We're going to talk Naked Gun movies. Very fun. So tons of extra stuff that you can get just by joining us over at Patreon, or continue listening to Storm of Spoilers. We'll talk about the Alien show. It'll be great. So there you go. That's all the stuff you can get from Dave and I elsewhere. Now to talk about xenomorphs. Dave?
Yeah, xenomorphs and Earth. Neil, what have you digested in preparing for Alien Earth?
So many things. Not any episodes of Alien Earth, though. I think we should say up front that we were not, I guess, fortunate enough to be any of the press that got the first six episodes of this eight-episode season to watch, which is fine. I like watching things with the people and being able to go week to week. This also allows us to get a little wilder with our theories because we won't know.
Sometimes you write a book about Disney and they don't want to talk to you ever again. That just applies to one of us.
I mean, yeah, that's not to say that we like tried to get screeners and were denied. We probably could have if we wanted to, but I, at this point, do actually kind of prefer being able to let myself get into the Citadel of Crazy Town and go to town on some theories and not have to hide the fact that I've seen multiple episodes of the show already. So neither Dave or I has seen any of this show, but we've had plenty of trailers to watch. As Dave mentioned in the opening, there's a fantastic Comic-Con panel moderated by our good friend Joanna Robinson, who hopefully is having a very successful surgery as we're recording this today. And some other Comic-Con like activations that they did so far, and just various interviews with Noah Hawley and the cast and crew that have been fairly interesting. So you know, I feel like we know a lot. And here's the other thing, Dave. Probably the best place to start, because we just came off of covering Andor, is that I have seen some snippets of reviews. I haven't read any in-depth reviews, because obviously I'm trying to not influence my own takes too much ahead of time. But I've seen some relatively smart people whose opinions I generally trust in this space, who have similar attachments and fervor for the Alien and or Predator franchises, use phrases like this is gonna be Andor for the Alien franchise.
That was the one I also saw.
And I can't tell if it's just because it's got that one dude, the actor who was also in Andor, who played the guy who wrote the manifesto in it, or if we really are about to get a complex political drama about this universe. So what is your interpretation of this? Does it make you more excited? Does it make you a little nervous? Maybe.
This makes me very excited. First of all, because Andor, I don't think, was the Andor of Star Wars until season two. I get what they're trying to say.
Sure.
But like having just come out of season two and see how they were able to deepen the story there, I was really, really impressed. So I'm on board for this. I would have been on board for this anyway. But I was online perpetually this past weekend and saw that, you know, on August 4th, a year ago, the final episode of House of the Dragon season two came out. And that was something we were covering on Trial by Content. And you could feel with that show, people sort of like losing interest in House of the Dragon as the season went on. Mm-hmm. I am very happy, at least with the pre-releases of this. We're going to have 6, 7 weeks, if you count this week's episode, of discussing like the TV show that's running this week. So I don't know. Good job us for pre-planning, but also just good job Alien franchise. It's really come back from where it has been, both with like Romulus and what Dan Trachtenberg has been doing with the Predator franchise, where like I literally thought before when Disney bought 20th Century Fox, I knew that they had like a 4K Alien print, but I hadn't seen it in theaters yet. Since then, I think we've both gotten to see it. Mm-hmm. I thought that Disney would take this franchise and be like, this is too adult and shut it all down. I've been very happy that this is the renewal we've gotten. And it's been a renewal so far of quality, give or take one visual effect. I don't really like an Alien Romulus.
Sure. Yeah, and I think that I shared that that feeling when Disney, especially because right after Disney bought Fox, you know, it was pre-pandemic, and I want to say this is one of the rare silver linings of the COVID pandemic, which was that before the pandemic came along, in between that period after Disney had bought Fox, it did seem like they were kind of packing up repertory screenings, right? And Alien had always been one of the great repertory screenings that you would always be able to catch, you know, once or twice a year, a screening of Alien or even Aliens on the big screen. It's just magnificent. It's one of the great theatrical experiences. But yeah, then when COVID came along and sort of wiped out the movie theater business, and studios were trying to sort of repopulate theaters without a bunch of new content all at once, Disney kind of relented, and they found something in the sense that a renewed interest in this franchise, which I dig. And I think that kind of goes with the fairly long journey that Noah Hawley had even gone on with this project. You know, he had been developing it since, you know, like 2018-ish, right? I mean, they've been trying to make an Alien TV show since the 80s, I think. And even Noah Hawley had been sort of unsuccessfully trying to make it since like 2018, 2019, and had been sort of shot down apparently by some Fox executives. And it wasn't until sort of after 2020 that they began feeling like they could make this thing happen. And here we are. It survived being paused by the SAG-AFTRA strike, and has come all the way through production. And I think, based on all the trailers so far, looks very slick. The comparisons to Andor are going to be interesting, Dave, because it's a high bar to set, I think, production wise, right? Because Andor is a very expensive show. And I don't know how it's hard to say yet whether this is going to be as expensive. But they are going for, and I've seen Noah Hawley talk about this, a level of faithfulness to especially the interior aesthetics of like the spaceships and things.
Yeah.
Noah Hawley mentioned, I think it was in that Comic-Con panel or one of the interviews that I saw, trying to basically do like a faithful one-to-one recreation of the Nostromo's interior for this new ship. All right. So let me hit you with a little story here.
Yeah.
The story we know so far, which is that this is obviously set in 2120, which is, what is it, 2 years before the Nostromo incident, right? Mm-hmm. Which is Ripley and her crew waking up and meeting the alien. It's obviously set on Earth. It is set around this ship, this vessel, the USCSS Maginot, which is either a Weyland-Yutani or just Yutani. We're waiting to see. Exploratory vessel, which has come back to Earth, come crashing back to Earth with anywhere between one or five or many terrifying alien species on board. And this is the ship that apparently is very much like the Nostromo and looks exactly like it in the trailers, which I think is immediately appealing. I'll be curious to see whether the exteriors match, because I was doing, as part of my research for this, I was watching Romulus, and I think that's one of the other things that Romulus gets right immediately, is it's not just like the interiors of the ships have that same vibe that like instantly transport me back to like the 1979 original, but the exteriors, and that especially in that opening scene, I'm just like, oh right, this is that same sort of industrial aesthetic that Ridley Scott nailed. And I haven't seen anything yet in the trailers for Alien Earth that has convinced me that they're going to nail that quite as much.
Interesting.
But it's just trailer stuff. I haven't seen the finished episodes yet. And I also think that was a very important part of Andor, right? Which is the moments where you're out in space, we're just out doing space battle stuff, and they're just letting the visual effects artist at ILM go off. So I'm curious to see if Alien Earth is going to have a lot of that before we get down to the character drama, which sounds like it's going to be sort of the main thrust of this show, at least according to one of the show's stars, Timothy Oliphant, which is his big quote from the Comic-Con panel that stuck with me was that, you know, obviously there's going to be plenty of frightening alien stuff and action and, you know, big set pieces, especially early on. But he's like, once you get like three or four episodes in, the really terrifying stuff is just two people talking in a room. And I'm that had me leaning forward in my chair and be like, tell me more, Timothy Oliphant, about these characters talking in a room and how that's really scary. Because, you know, Noah Hawley does that pretty well. So I'm interested in that. I'm interested in how that also sort of fits into the rest of the story, which is about this trillionaire guy, Boy Cavalier, who runs this corporation called the Prodigy Corp, who is trying, once this vessel, the Maginot, crashes on Earth, is trying to get in there and get these specimens. And he's also a guy who apparently has been working on transferring human consciousness into synthetic bodies, and he has transferred the consciousnesses of children into synthetic adult bodies, and that sort of gives us our lead character, Sydney Chandler's Wendy. And I believe that's that may be the other sort of thrust. And I think, you know, I was trying to think, Dave, about like what are the essential, the core elements of like the alien stories that make it interesting, right? Obviously, right. You have to have the xenomorph, and KY Jelly covered xenomorph, and all of the full life cycle of the xenomorph, right? I want to see eggs. I want to see face huggers. I want to see chest bursters. I want to see, you know, the full, I want to see a guy in a suit, which apparently we are definitely going to get in this show.
Nice.
There's a gentleman named Cameron Brown, who is a 6'2" actor. Apparently a very soft-spoken vegan man.
All right.
Plays the xenomorph in a suit, which I found very funny. So yeah, xenomorph is number one. I also want a show that is invested in like the workers and like their struggle against like corporate fascism. Right. You mentioned how corporations have taken over Earth, or we expect that this is an Earth that has sort of been overrun by technocratic.
The marketing has been very corporation forward.
Yeah.
And, we're not talking about countries or presidents.
Yeah. And how do the workers struggle against technocratic corporate fascism, which so far I haven't seen a ton of this in the marketing, at least of this show, sort of digging into that quite as much as like Romulus is like very interested in that. Right. It's about this group of like mining workers. But then there's this other element that I think exists in all of the alien movies that this show is very interesting, which is questioning the dangers of artificial intelligence, looking at the boundaries of what it means to be human, and sort of playing around with everything in that space, which is, you know, increasingly relevant to our real world. And I think we'll have us asking and answering interesting questions about AI again. And, you know, this show appears to be giving us like five main characters who are robots at the very least.
I mean, that's the fun thing I think about this version of the robots is these are teenagers or young children transferred into slightly older bodies, but instead of something like David or something like Ash that has been programmed to be close to a human, these are actual humans who are in these almost indestructible bodies. Granted, they can be destroyed. Alien 3 shows us that, you know, you could turn Bishop on and he's still all googly, but he wants to die. So there is a way to destroy these bodies. But if you could transfer these consciousnesses, then we're dealing with, like, I don't know, on the outside, like a Rick and Morty type of thing where it's like that these people have conquered death, but only for teenagers who have no concept of death. So I'm really interested to see what happens here, because I would say that the original Alien franchise is very much about like military meets body horror, which I think is very cool, and it has given us, you know, decades of different types of alien stories. And then Ridley Scott came back with like Covenant and Prometheus and was sort of about yelling at God and the basis of what gives humans the right to create. And maybe creating AI was letting a Pandora's box out. And by creating AI, at least what Covenant suggests, is by creating AI, we allowed David to create the perfect organism to destroy us in the Xenomorph. But I again, that's not factually connected yet, but it's thematically connected. So I'm interested to see what this one does if we're in a world that not only has made AI, if we're close enough to the Nostromo happening, Ash is already out in space somewhere. Mm-hmm. But if we've sort of conquered death, how interesting it would be to a society that thinks it's right on the edge of conquering death to meet death incarnate in these five alien species. The idea sort of that we could protect ourselves and things in space based on knowing things on Earth, I think is part of the flaw of the alien or the humans in the alien franchise. So I can't wait to see what Noah Hawley has to say about that. To kind of echo what you were saying, like two dudes talking to each other is some of the best Noah Hawley television. This man made probably the most successful adaptation of a superhero television show with Legion, mm-hmm. by mostly not leaning into the superhero aspects of it, but leaning into the more heady, thought-based aspects of it. So I can't wait to see what happens and what we learn about death and just how shitty humans are still in the future.
Yeah, I mean, I think... The premise sets up all kinds of interesting questions, right? Why does it have to be children? Right? Mm-hmm. Why can't you transfer adults into synthetics? And then what is it? What could go wrong? Right? What are the potential side effects or things that maybe could change or like adverse effects of going into a synthetic body that these... young people could be experiencing? Because the way it's presented in the trailers, at least, is that this is a fairly new horizon that they have crossed, right?
Right. And calling them Wendy and the Lost Boys means that we're probably going to see some sort of arrested development in like adult bodies, mm-hmm. because we're hinting to that thematically. But if that's where we're starting, I can't wait to see how that develops once, again, they have this feeling of supreme control. And then I imagine when they... the ship crashes, that supreme control or that feeling is going to be a little rattled. Like, I imagine, I'm just going to guess. I'm going to come out here with a guess. Based on what you've described, we're going to have like a couple episodes of trying to close down this crash site and corral these species as assets. And then I would imagine something happens where we stop thinking of them as assets and are start like, oh, this is actually a problem. It'd be interesting to see how the series deals with that sort of like escalation. Are they going to treat it like a monster movie? Or are they going to treat it like a pandemic allegory? There's a whole bunch of ways it could go after we deal with the initial thing, which is this thing crash landed and we have to figure out how to contain it.
Are they going to need to just drop an entire nuclear bomb on a town in Colorado to fix it? Because that is... that has been
poor
a solution
Gunnison.
In the past.
It's just a crater out here, Neil. I'm from Denver. We still talk about the Gunnison crater.
I mean, that's another big question that I have, which is in the context, in the canon of this show, will this be seen as the first time a xenomorph has ever come to Earth? Or is someone going to be like, you know, back in 2004, there was this town in Colorado.
Yeah,
a little story called Alien versus Predator Requiem, where aliens and predators came down and an entire town in Colorado needed to be nuked. But I am the canon of it all is very fascinating to me. I was looking up the timeline of what sort of is happening in this universe around mm-hmm. then, and also in some of the interviews, because it does seem like Noah Hawley is interested in obviously where this takes place relative to Ridley Scott's original movie, the 1979 film, but less so necessarily with like the canonical elements of the prequels, Prometheus and Covenant, at least as far as what he's signaled so far. Then again, Dave, as a connoisseur of this franchise, the Predator franchise, and the various crossovers, this to me is one of the, you know, the OG sort of ever expanding, sprawling cinematic universe projects.
Sure.
Where I don't think any of these properties have ever really resisted the urge to at least lay down some Easter eggs, right? Like the new Predator Badlands movie can't even do a series of trailers without showing us a Weyland-Yutani logo.
Right.
So I think I'm going to be on very high alert for anything. Like if the plasma gun from AVP Requiem is on someone's wall somewhere in this show or something like that.
Well, here's what we know from like pre-show interviews. We will see a Yutani in this show. It's played by Sandra Yee Sensendiver, who I've been trying to pronounce correctly, but we will see how it goes. She's on Foundation, so I've seen her before. Don't tell anybody I've been watching Foundation. I've been pretending to just quietly not watch it. But it apparently the Yutani Corporation, according to Noah Hawley pre-show interviews with Danny Fair, this is like a matriarchal corporation. So we've seen sort of like the Weyland Corp lineage in Prometheus and Covenant. And now we'll be looking at the Yutani one. But Hawley says that her grandmother ran the company and then her mother ran it. And somewhere there was a merger with Weyland. Now this Yutani is trying to navigate being the second name in a corporation. So if her grandmother ran it and then her mother ran it, does that reach far enough back to 2004 where we see a woman Yutani receive that blaster from the Predator?
Mm-hmm.
It is possible because I guess...
It's 116 years? That could be grandma.
Yeah. The Maggio, as you mentioned, is maybe a Weyland-Yutani ship. It definitely is now that the two companies have merged, but it seems like it might have launched as just a Yutani ship, which would be interesting because if they had the Predator gun, they would know to send a ship out there to look for other alien species. I would say not only am I looking for is AVP universe, like is Requiem going to lead directly into this show, but is this show going to try to reestablish any Earth timeline about like when we knew what existed? Because in theory, even without the AVP blaster, Predators have been to Earth in like our past, you and I's past, Neil.
Mm-hmm.
So we already know that the alien is around, or that aliens are around, just not that the xenomorph is around. So it'd be interesting to see what sort of nods we get towards other aliens having ever been on Earth. If AVP Requiem is canon, does that mean every pyramid around the world has an alien queen underneath it? Like, I think there's some ways you could nod to it without necessarily making it canon. Because I think if everything's canon, a single xenomorph being loose on the planet has its stakes reduced.
Sure. Yeah, and I even think there's additional... I don't know if it's fully canonical stuff, but various, I believe it's comic books where they mm-hmm. establish that there is evidence of xenomorphs potentially being around on Earth in archaeological form.
Yeah.
Right.
I imagine that's just some comic book writer being like, what if xenomorphs fought dinosaurs? Because that's literally a thought that I've had ever since I've had, you know, those Aliens toys and the Jurassic Park toys in like 1993. So I would love to see those things.
Sure.
I will be interested to see how much of this Alien Earth show is sort of like a biological horror, biologically based, because Covenant and Prometheus definitely steered in that direction,
mm-hmm.
where like the original series was much more about, I don't know, like a body horror and not necessarily trying to explain things.
Sure.
But it'll be interesting to see what happened.
It's from the comic book Aliens Apocalypse. And this is an event that happens in 2116 AD, which is about 4 years before the events of this series.
Okay.
In Australia, a doctor named Lucien Keitel finds traces of xenomorphs 1.6 billion years old in Australia's Great Desert. And here's the reason why I bring this up. It could be entirely unrelated, right? It could not all of this could be canon, especially if it's in a Predator movie or something, but this is in an Alien comic book. And I was watching this interview that Noah Hawley did with Dan Casey at IGN, and he talks about sort of this the council of nerdiness that he seems to have assembled among like department heads, right? He talks about like bringing in the weapons master on this show, who was apparently just like had this encyclopedic knowledge of every different weapon that's ever been used in any movie in this franchise, and having people like in the art department who are just like massive deep cut level fans of the Alien franchise, and how he felt his role was to sort of be like the head nerd and be able to filter all of that power into what gets into the show. So that almost leads me to believe that this is the kind of show that could be diving a little bit deeper, or could have some specific deep pulls on its mind. So I wouldn't entirely be surprised if this show was interested in some like some deep cut. This is also why I want to play Alien Isolation, a game that I have played but have not fully finished, because guess what is also kind of happening around this time, like 1 year, specifically 1 year after the events of this show in 2021 AD, the events of Alien Isolation. So it's like, I don't know, there's a lot of existing story details that they could be playing around with here, that could be fun little like Easter eggs. Then again, Noah Hawley, great storyteller, he's got a great cast. They could make up all kinds of stuff on their own, and I'm sure it'll be fine.
Well, I guess that's a good question here in terms of like, let me ask you in terms of what you think this scope is. Do we see an Amanda Ripley? Do they need to tie it to that franchise?
I don't think so necessarily. I think I would be more concerned if I were trying to build out the story of this show, especially because it's going to be so heavily focused on Earth, because Amanda Ripley's not on Earth, right?
Well, she's not on Earth a year from now.
Yeah, she's definitely not on Earth a year from now. So she's probably not on Earth at this point. And so maybe not as relevant, but I do think that whether or not xenomorphs or similar entities have been to Earth before is interesting, right?
Yeah.
Like if this show wants to really get into like whether or not the xenomorphs have ever been to Earth before, and whether or not there's like archaeological records of them, I think that's deeply fascinating. I also think mostly because this franchise has never shown us much of Earth, and when they have, it's like the worst possible version at the end of Alien Resurrection. I'm just fascinated to see like what this sort of retro futuristic version of Earth ends up being, especially because I think it's going to sort of bridge the gap aesthetically between the sort of worker level stuff that we get in, you know, being on the Nostromo, right, which is like a mining craft, or and then all the stuff we get in Prometheus, which is like we're spending a lot of time with Wayland. So we're like with the rich guy, but out in space. This one, we're going to be interested in sort of this extremely rich guy and his life on Earth. So I'm interested to see how they sort of maintain a balance between giving us something that's familiar to like the working class aesthetic of Alien, and still showing us something new about like what life is like for this weirdo trillionaire guy who lives on Earth.
Yeah. Similar question. We're dealing a lot with synthetics and different companies' version of synthetics, but Weyland Yutani is here, and Ash and Walter models, in theory, are out and about. Mm-hmm. Do we get some cameo of different synthetics in this series, do you think?
I mean, this has got to be the number one fear, right? After Romulus.
Well, they built all that tech for Romulus. In theory, they could just use that tech again.
Well, listen, as someone who watched Romulus again this morning, I hope not. Right. I hope that this, similar to what Andor did very successfully, which is resisting the urge to go for the obvious cameos and sort of the easily recognizable pieces of the franchise, because with Alien, you really don't need to. Right. Like, it's not like Star Wars where, you know, Darth Vader is kind of the easy one. Like in Alien, you're going to get the recognizable thing at all times because the xenomorph is here. You don't necessarily need to bring us Ash. We don't need a Rook. We don't need any of that nonsense. We have multiple brand new synthetic characters whose stories we can tell, who can have, you know, similar to like, you could have replaced Ian Holm's character with a completely different actor and given that character a completely different name in Romulus, and it would have worked significantly better because it would not have been distracted by the bad effect. So I'm, you know, hopeful that maybe they've learned that lesson, but we'll see. You know, don't do the big cameo. Resist the urge to do anything too specific and overt a reference, right? And mm-hmm. just like leave all that other stuff, leave your references and your Easter eggs for things that are happening in the background or little tiny threads that maybe you pull in an interesting way. It doesn't necessarily have to be a CGI recreation of a familiar face.
What about Lance Henriksen? We're going to see Lance Henriksen in this series.
I mean, he's still around, right?
Yeah, he is still around. I mean, he doesn't look like Bishop or the Whalen that he played in Alien versus Predator. And also, I believe, in Alien 3. But that's he does true. Have a canonical place as being both the synthetic and a Whalen.
Still does look like Lance Henriksen, though.
Still does look like Lance Henriksen.
I don't know. I'm a Noah Hawley believer. So, like, I believe that Noah Hawley is the kind of showrunner who would create this show with the kind of confidence where he wouldn't need to go there unless he had a really good story reason to give us Lance Henriksen. You know? Yeah.
So I mean, there is a world where it's like, I think we're more likely to get like a Dallas's child or something, you know, like if we're going to connect to the original trilogy, I don't think it necessarily has to be a Ripley or an Ash.
Sure. Or make it like a voice or something, you know?
Yeah. Just mother. It's just, mother sounds the same.
Some sort of message that we recognize that's like a voice or, you know, some sort of transmission that comes through would be fine. But, you know, we don't need to go too far. You've got Timothy Oliphant. Use as much Timothy Oliphant as you can.
Absolutely. So that being said, we are going to be back next week with a reaction to the 2-episode premiere. Mm-hmm. Do you have any pre-storm predictions for us how we're going to spend these first 2 hours in the alien Earth world?
Well, I kind of have a season long one, not necessarily these first two. So they've billed it as there's one xenomorph for this entire first season.
Yes.
But then there was this question during the Comic-Con panel where somebody asked if there were going to be any hybrids. And Noah Hawley sort of made this funny face and was like, well, I can't tell you that. I don't think it's just one xenomorph. I think that's a ruse. I think that's a marketing ruse. And I think that they're going to do something interesting. Because if you think about it, what alien sequel or spinoff or prequel or anything outside of the first Alien movie has ever done a xenomorph that hasn't had a little bit of a tweak or some sort of hybridization? Or I think we're going to see something special. I think there is some kind of xenomorph-ish monster in this show that's going to be extremely unique. And I think that's going to be potentially very cool. Hopefully it's not a CGI blob, but I'm always curious when it comes to these kinds of movies, like what is going to be the acceleration in the life cycle of the xenomorph that they find. So I don't, I, you know, they keep saying, oh, we just got the one xenomorph and he's scary enough. And it's like, I don't think it's that simple. It's never that simple. So that would be my prediction. And it's probably a really, really, really softball prediction at this point.
That's good. I'm just going to stick to the first two episodes. I think we will have cleaned up the crash after the first two episodes.
Okay.
And be like,
be chasing monsters for the rest of the season.
And maybe your reveal that you're talking about is at the end of like an episode two, but I think episodes one and two is going to be like, look how good humanity has gotten at controlling this stuff, only for everything to be debased because we screw it up. I'm really expecting Alien Earth to lean on that we screw this up every time we encounter this species.
Well, and you would expect that the people on Earth would be far more capable of dealing with this threat than the crew of the Nostromo, right? The crew of the Nostromo is just a bunch of workers.
I mean, positives, the acid blood could go lots of places without destroying your ship. That's a positive. Sure. Negative, there is a high percentage of alien movies where the solution is blow them out the airlock. We could not blow them out the airlock this time.
Cannot do that on Earth. Yeah. But you could throw them into a volcano. That'd be fun.
Ooh, maybe.
I don't know. That's what I would do.
I mean, they survive. He survives molten lead in Alien 3 until he's cooled down. So you need to throw him in a volcano and then cool him down when he's coming out. I don't know why I'm gendering the xenomorph. It.
Sure.
Why you throw
dip him in a volcano and then chuck him into the ocean? Sort of thing.
I mean, that would work. Just spray him with a hose. Anyway, maybe that's how episode two ends. Is we threw him in a volcano. No problem. Love that. Let's then transition into the storm, where we'll talk a little bit more about how this might connect the other franchise. Very, very light spoilers, since, as Neil has mentioned, we haven't actually seen the episodes that have been released, but some people have, and I know some stuff. Check back with us right after this.
First storm and the last.
All right, Neil. So the thing that the reviews have been mentioning that I'm really looking forward to is apparently there's a whole last flashback episode that people are saying is basically like Holly's take on the original Alien, where you get to see the Maginot go down. Which also I think involves the cat, which we got a cat named Rascal. So my guess is,
I think we see a fair amount of this in one of the trailers.
It does look like it, yeah, because they're setting it up like it happens early on, but apparently we're going to flashback and get some more background about how the Xenomorph caused the crash.
Episode, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah, I'm psyched for a flashback episode. Where do you think that lands in our run?
I think that's like an episode three thing, an episode two. I mean, I know it's in the first six, because those are the ones that the critics got. But you know, that's something that I would almost put, if your pacing theory is right, and like we do sort of deal with the fallout of it crashing on Earth, most of that fallout in the first two episodes, like episode three would be kind of an interesting place to put that, right?
Yeah.
Just as it feels like we're wrapping up, or right as like something gets worse, we sort of stop and then turn around and learn key details about what it was that that was on that ship. I mean, it is interesting that they talk about it's not just one specific species, right? It's not just the xenomorph, but like at least five different species from various places in the universe are on this ship. So again, that leads me to believe hybrid, leads me to believe that, like, who says that one of those isn't a predator or something predator like. And I think that could be an interesting part of the flashback, which is like showing us what else they found out there. You know, maybe the xenomorph isn't the scariest thing that this ship brought back.
Yeah.
That'd be wild.
I mean, I do think that where it's placed in the season is going to depend on what sort of reveal it contains within it, because Alien Earth does a TV-sized version of Alien is kind of a boring idea if you're not leading with it. So I'm expecting another layer to it where it's like, we see that like the company sent them to like pick up a facehugger and they didn't even mean to get the xenomorph. Or like you were saying, there's a intervening where we just assume the alien causes the crash because we've seen that so many times before and there's some other elements to it that we haven't seen.
Sure. One of the crew members causes the crash at the company's behest.
Well, we know the synth from the Mangio survives, and I'm going to guess the cat survives because you got to save the cat.
Sure.
But it also sounds like, based on there needing to be a flashback episode, that synth is keeping some sort of secrets, which also lines up with how we deal with synths in the Alien franchise. So it could just be that episode reveals whatever secret the synth has been hiding as the alien runs around Earth. But I am interested to see where it shows up, because if it shows up in episode 3, that just seems like a everybody calm down, this is the series that you're expecting sort of thing. But if it shows up at like it's the last episode they gave to critics, like episode 6, that means that there's some big reveal in it.
Sure.
That is about where the rest of the series goes. So I'm very interested to see.
That means that those last two are something.
Yeah.
Something wild.
It'll be very interesting to see what happens when they bring up that flashback episode, which is going to bring me to another piece of speculation. But the original rap party images for this had something in silhouette from the front that we all assumed was an alien. But while you were talking about it, maybe there's more than one alien. I got a little flash of some early speculation that we had, I guess like over a year ago now when this production wrapped, which is that this would be finally the realization of something that we saw in the art for Neil Blomkamp's aborted Alien sequel, which is an alien armor. Once you harvest it, you use pieces of the xenomorph to build like an armor, and that's the only way you could combat other pieces of xenomorph. So not only do I think there might be more xenomorphs,
mech suit sort of deal.
I think we might be using the xenomorph to build like a xenomorph type armor for these Wendy and the Lost Boys, because the xenomorph, as we learned in Alien Romulus, is effectively immortal in certain conditions, like a lobster on Earth, effectively immortal. And then these people are trying to reach for immortality. So what if the goal is to sort of put them in a, not a hybrid in terms of a genetic hybrid like we're used to this making, but what a company would call a hybrid, which would be like a cybernetic body that has xenomorph parts. And if so, if that happens, we've learned from Alien Resurrection that if you mix human DNA and alien DNA, some of the personality traits cross over.
Sure.
So it could be like, oh, hey, we've developed this armor to defeat an alien, and oh no, we misunderstood what that means, and we've created like this crazy new monster.
Sure. Also, we fucked up and only used children.
Exactly. We've made children aliens somehow. It's ridiculous.
We put a child's mind into a xenomorph. Oh no. We fucked up.
While you were researching, did you happen across any details about the other aliens?
No. I sort of intentionally didn't go any deeper on that because I was like, I don't necessarily want to know yet.
I found one that we found a lot of stuff about, but is absolutely terrifying. It has like a name, like a species name, like T something, something, something. But I've been calling it the eyeball alien.
Okay.
Because it looks like a jellyfish, but it is small. And what it does, from what we could gather from like the trailers and the teasers, is it will attack you and pull out your eyeball and then nestle itself in your eye socket and extend its tentacles into your brain and then pretend to be your eyeball. So it's a parasitic species that will control you, but it is actually in your eye. And we saw a little bit of it in the first trailer. And then the second trailer, we see a sheep with a bulging eye that is like blood down. And I'm like, oh, that eyeball alien. Terrifying. Mm-hmm. That thing's terrifying. But that also brings up the idea that these alien species might be a little bit more sentient than we were giving them credit for.
Sure.
So like, we don't need to be doing a Monster of the Week, but we could be doing a Monster of the Week for longer than we think. in trying to collect these different species, because each one seems to have a horrid body horror life cycle that we get to explore on its own.
Well, and that could be another path toward dangerous hybridization, which is like the xenomorph. I've never really read as being super intelligent, right? Or like the xenomorph is like an instinctual killer, right? I don't necessarily read it as having like a sentience in the same way that humans have right. a sentience.
It might have a hive mind, depending on what version you're mm-hmm. talking about.
But if this eyeball monster were to attach itself to a xenomorph and it's got a higher level of sentience, that makes for a very dangerous crossbreed.
Well, I don't think it could attach itself to a xenomorph because xenomorphs famously no eyes. So that's going to be a little tough. But that does put literally everything else that has eyes onto that ship. What if what we're actually worried about is the eyeball alien and the xenomorph is kind of inconsequential because it's the one thing that can't have the eyeball alien in it?
Sure, sure. But it's also just like running around killing people. Because that's
or has been in one person that we've trusted for a whole bunch of episodes, and then we learn about the fucking eyeball alien and we're like, oh my god, which one of these people doesn't have a real eyeball? It'll be fun. I don't think we're gonna do the thing coded everybody has to poke their eyeball to see who the imposter is, but we could sure. We could do something like that.
All right,
go ahead.
I know, I like it. I'm into it.
Yeah. You talked a little bit about things that had been, you know, happening around this time period, according to the Alien versus Predator official timeline. We do know that the Nostromo, in terms of how hypersleep works, we think is already out there on its way to eventually happen across LV-37. So that happens. How do you, Neil, connect the alien species from when we last saw it at the end of Covenant, canonically,
sure.
to here at Alien Earth? Because Covenant sort of hinted that David was off to do more experimentations somewhere. But it's only been 2 years, so I don't know if we have that much. Or no, I'm sorry. It's been 17 years. Mm-hmm. But that being said, the alien that we see in the original Alien is crash-landed on a different planet, might have been there for a while. Seems to be slightly different life cycle wise than what we saw in the Covenant, because the Covenant aliens emerge fully formed and the alien from Aliens go into like a chest burster mode before they become a full xenomorph. So is Alien Earth going to concern itself with the life cycle of the xenomorph at all? Or are we going to figure something new out about where the species really came from?
That's probably one of the more interesting questions, right? Because And I think that might be why Noah Hawley is like tiptoeing around or sort of standing at a distance from the Ridley Scott prequels a little bit, because it's easier, I guess, if you're just like, well, yeah, those movies, I guess, canonically may have happened, but also the goop that created the xenomorphs is also out there elsewhere in the universe. And was sort of on its way to evolving into these xenomorphs anyway. So it's like this theory that David's experiments were creating different kinds of monsters, right? Different offshoots of the xenomorph, which again, canonically makes sense because we see across this franchise many different iterations of the xenomorph. But that isn't the only source of where the xenomorphs came from. It's right. like the ultimate, like whatever the goop was that they found in Prometheus, right? On that planet, the little snakes and the little egg goops that the guys kept taking their helmets off to inspect for some stupid reason. Like that goop was on this evolutionary path on maybe multiple planets for all we know, that was taking over the bodies of humanoid explorers, not just humans, but maybe other entities as well, and that xenomorphs had been sprouting up all over the place, right? You know,
yeah.
I think the implication with the xenomorph, and I think this is why it's a fair criticism of the David storyline to say that it sort of pigeonholes the evolution of the xenomorph down to this scientific experiment by this one synthetic entity, David. Whereas, like, in the original, in the 1979 original, it's kind of presented as, like, millions of years of evolution have created this perfect organism.
Right.
And I still think that's it's possible to stick to that in this world and have David out there running around making up his own version of this. So it's like the xenomorph kind of came about on its own and could have existed on other planets. And that's where the xenomorph that we're going to meet here comes in. And that's where the one from you know, the 1979 movie comes in. Those didn't necessarily come from Origae 6, the planet in Covenant, right? But it's all sort of stems from that same goop, right?
Yeah.
Because that wasn't the only goop.
Absolutely. I always thought that the implied thing between the aliens in the original series and the difference between those that David was engineering is there's like a insectoid species that's missing in my mind. So like the David ones are very much like born of engineers and humans and pregnancy, and you have all these things together. But we see that that sort of also
the one that comes out of Noomi Rapace has that like very like whitish skin tone and is very much looks like an engineer baby.
Same with the neomorphs. So the idea is that that strain of xenomorph, Noomi Rapace's Shaw, is like the alien queen of that version, because I guess he genetically produced the egg by sacrificing her, because he goes to the other planet with engineer like people and kills them all to basically like use their biology on experiments. But he only has one human, which is why when the Covenant shows up, it's such a great opportunity to have more human experiments. But if you go back to the LV aliens, those seem like slightly insectoid. They have queens. They use, you know, like their slime to make hives. They, you know, pod people up. Those are all things that we don't see happen with the David strain of xenomorph. So I always assume, similarly to you, the xenomorph is towards the end of the evolutionary cycle of the black goo, but it's also taking things from all the different species that it encounters. And I at least am waiting to figure out what the insectoid part of these aliens are, because there are, there's part of them that's like ants. There's part of them that's, you know, like a bee, but there's something that's not humanoid and not engineer based that I could tell that we are missing in a version of alien.
Is ultimately the scariest part evolutionarily of this like xenomorph, like the base DNA of the xenomorph, which is like, it can infect just about anything and take a little bit from whatever it infects. And once it is reborn as a chestburster, it becomes even stronger based on the DNA that it co-opts while it's gestating, right? Like it, it attaches itself to a human. It gets a little bit of human. It attaches itself to a glip glorp. It gets a little bit of glip glorp, whatever that is out there in the galaxy. You know, it's a fun story concept because it could be whatever you want it to be, because it's happening out in the mysterious void of space, where it could be interacting with all kinds of different species that are completely made up. So
yeah,
and that makes it incredibly scary in the sense that it just becomes more and more dangerous with every new species that it co-opts genetically.
It's sort of the biological Borg in that way, which kicks back to one of the oldest fan debates about what happens when the Borg meets the xenomorphs. But don't worry, I don't think that's going to happen in this series. However, I do think that we're moving towards a, if the Earth plotline is talking about evolving post-death and the aliens sort of do that naturally, that makes me even more convinced that at the end of this series, they're going to try to combine the two. And that's the sort of push of this series about why that was a bad idea. But we'll have to see as it goes on. One more question on our way out, Neil.
Sure.
And maybe we update these odds as we go along. But odds on a crossover on either Alien Earth or Predator Badlands debuting the other species first. Predator Badlands is in November, so it would definitely come in second if we think that there are going to be aliens there. But as we mentioned in the column with all the Yutani business, that directs back to predators, and they would be, in theory, one of the earlier alien species we knew were ever on Earth. So what do you think the odds are that we get a predator mention on Alien Earth?
I mean, it's going to be interesting because I don't necessarily know if we get a predator mention, but we know that Elle Fanning's character in Predator Badlands is a Weyland Yutani entity.
Yes.
And we know that this show is going to be very interested in synthetic entities being created on Earth as part of sort of the competition between these big corporations, right? The ones we're working with are the Prodigy Corporation, but Weyland-Yutani obviously going to be very much part of the conversation here. So yeah. I do wonder if, because we don't know yet where Predator Badlands is set timeline-wise, do we? Do we know what year?
I don't think so, no.
Okay, so we don't know if
it has the Weyland-Yutani thing on the back of the eyeball. It's the only synth we've seen then is in Alien Romulus, so it's
like after
could be
this.
Around Alien Romulus.
So it's either right after this or significantly after this, but probably a little bit after this timeline-wise. So I do think it's like this show could set up something that leads us to that character being out there on the Badlands planet that the Predator is on, like this show giving us little bits and pieces that help us explain how that character ends up where she is at the start of Predator Badlands, I think would be really interesting. Because Noah Hawley was asked about this during the Comic-Con panel as well as one of the audience questions. And he's like, I don't have anything to tell you about this, right? He's not going to spoil his own show. Right. He's like, but I do really love what Dan Trachtenberg is doing. And he's like, I think it would be really nice if we could all just get along.
Everybody's saying they're all going to get along. My question is, have they done it and they're teasing us? Or is this the creatives being like, hey, Disney, just put us in a room, please. I mean, we could make some movies for
that's
you.
That's the other thing is like most of the hurdles that would have previously been that would stop something like this previously are gone, right? Like, you know, these aren't like separate entities within 20th Century Fox that are making these movies. It's just sharing a lot of the same producers. It's all part of the Disney 20th Century Studios family. It's part of Disney as we know has this very strong desire to have connectivity between all of its properties. And I think it has shown a willingness to do that with Alien and Predator in its modern iteration. So I don't see any reason why they wouldn't do it. But Right. They're probably very cognizant of the fact that the Alien versus Predator movies are not looked upon very well by audiences. And so they're, going to be very careful with how they execute this. I would expect it to be subtle in some way, but yeah, I would put the odds at like 90%. Like there's like a 90% chance there's going to be some kind of connective tissue between this and Dan Trachtenberg's Predator universe, whether that is referencing Prey or any of the previous Predator entries as Predator Killer of Killers has done, or setting up some sort of breadcrumbs that would lead us to explaining Elle Fanning's character in Badlands, which is, imminent, right? That's like 2 months.
I'm so with you that I think we get some breadcrumbs to lead to whatever Elle Fanning is. I don't think they're going to put Predator and Alien Earth. So I'm going to take the opposite of yours. I'm going to take the 10%. And we're going to, this is 10% chance that the Predators or Predator is referenced in Alien Earth. And we'll update as we go along.
I think they're building towards something, right? Like, I think this isn't going to be the show that does it, or at least not this season. But like, I do think that Dan Trachtenberg wants to do it. I think that Noah Hawley is enough of a nerd that he may want to do it eventually. So like, I wouldn't be surprised if like any surviving characters from this show maybe end up meeting a predator someday, or elements from this show end up interacting with a predator someday, but I don't know if they're going to do that all in this first season.
I know Predator Badlands is supposed to be like a buddy movie between an Elle Fanning synth and a predator, but I do think it would be more interesting if after Alien Earth, we learned that the Elle Fanning synth was actually a person once. Mm-hmm. I think that's a sort of like deepening thing that could maybe happen.
Sure.
But then also I think Predator Badlands, all we know is a predator goes on his first hunt for the most dangerous game, and they're making us think it's that big monster we see in the trailer, but like we know what the most dangerous game in this universe is. So mm-hmm. I think chances are higher for Predator Badlands as a theatrical Predator movie than I think it is for Alien Earth, but we'll have to see as that happens, or as the series progress, how we feel about that, because there is also a world where everything we think we know about Alien Earth is we've used it all by the third episode. Like sure. We just see all the things that we thought we were going to see by the third episode and have no idea where it goes, because that's sort of how Legion went. So I can't wait to see what Alien Earth has to offer us this next upcoming Tuesday on FX on Hulu.
Yep. And shout out to FX and Hulu, because even though they're dropping two episodes to begin with, the rest of them are week to week, which I love.
Yeah.
We get to do week-to-week TV show coverage, which
I don't just suddenly watch great. 4.5 hours of King of the Hill like I did this week, so I'm good. We're good. All right, guys, make sure to join us on this feed next Wednesday as we'll be reacting to the first two episodes of Alien Earth here on this feed. Until then, go out, be excellent to each other, and don't let any corporation put your consciousness into a synthetic body. We're still working that out. Thank you.